Clubhouse.
This is the true story. True story of two sassy friends picked to co-host a podcast
and have their thoughts recorded
to find out what happens.
What?
When people stop being polite.
Did you silence your phone?
And start getting real. The Real World Podcast. This is Caroline.
Hey, this is Aisha.
And today we're here talking about Real World Homecoming New York, Episode 5. Aisha, I feel like we were just in some crazy Groundhog Day with this crew.
Here we are back again. In the living room. Same conversation.
I know, with Heather being like, hey, so what was your question again, Kevin?
Rewind. She went real radio host on that one. But I was like, it was a good reminder, though, for me. Yeah. Why did you bring this up, Kevin?
And all I can figure out, right, is that they just, I mean, he thought there would be some amount of closure here or something.
I know we heavily implied last episode that this could have been like a production thing that, you know, was kind of staged to like have the whole conversation. But I think after seeing this episode, I really feel like Kevin was troubled.
Yes.
Like he couldn't get it off his mind. He could not get past it. And when he said that he just doesn't discard people, which I really took to heart because it's something that like I kind of live by too, you know, like I just don't discard people. It's very hard for me to, you know, maybe it's not the healthiest thing, but it's very hard for me to cut you out of my life.
Yeah.
Because I give people a lot of chances, you know,
yeah.
And it's just my own heart. When he said, I don't discard people, I felt it. And I was like, I don't think he can just get past this. He needs that closure, which he kept saying over and over again, not just from 92, but like from now.
Yeah.
From like yesterday or whatever
yeah.
it was.
Yeah, exactly. I was really intrigued with every person's different response in this. Heather's just wise words that I feel like mm-hmm. she scattered all over this episode, but when she was really focusing on time thieving and don't let people have your time, I was like, Heather, that is something that you and I are cut from the same cloth in terms of not being able to discard people and letting it eat at us. Oh gosh, if only I could say that one last right thing that could smooth things over
right.
with that and person
just be the peacemaker somehow.
Somehow.
But then part of me also is a lot like Heather B. Because, and I know we've been in situations where I just is like, it's not worth my time.
Mm.
I value my time. Don't steal my joy. Don't rob me from my joy. Don't do it. Because if I'm in a place where I know I'm feeling good, I know things are going right in my life, and something tries to step in and steal that joy, I react really, 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 really strongly to that. And it's like, and I put up that like arm, that stiff arm, like
your Heisman. Do not.
Like, don't do it. Not today.
I feel you. And the thing is that I think the happier you are or the more easygoing you are, the more you attract those people who want to steal that joy.
Because
there's a lot of people in the world who carry around a lot of crap. And when they see someone looking lighthearted, looking bouncy, they're like, first mm-hmm. things first, I need to weigh that person down hard.
And how am I going to get on your shoulders and your back?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it happens. And those are the people that really frighten me because they'll seep into my life and then I'll start to see it happening. And I'm like, mm-hmm. whoa, 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 whoa. 13-year-old Caroline might have like gone in for the shenanigans. But today, Caroline, mm-mm. you know, this is Real World Homecoming. Okay. This is 30 years later.
These are grown folks.
I know what is going on right. and I'm not playing these shenanigans. No. Like, I just can't. Like, it's just, I just can't.
We don't got the time.
Mm-mm. We don't. We really, really don't. Do you think quarantine's helped that realization for people that like you don't know how much time anyone has left? And I don't just mean like you could catch
absolutely.
COVID.
Absolutely. Yes. It's the one thing that I've gathered from this whole time is like time is precious. Life is precious. Do what you want to do. Make yourself happy because you don't know when you're going to be shut down.
Yeah.
You never know when the world will stop for a year.
Yeah. I just read this thing today that said, you know, the retirement age is 65 and the average life expectancy is 76.
What?
So the world expects that you should have 11 years to enjoy yourself.
Wow.
Think about
that's
that.
A very tragic.
That is. And I'm like, thought. I reject that. Like,
rebuke.
We're having fun today, people, because you just don't know. Like, no. Go out and laugh. I have had a chance to laugh with some old friends recently. And man, let me just tell you, Aish, I laughed. I had one pear martini and I laughed and I laughed and I was almost apologizing. I was laughing so much and I couldn't even like make conversation because I was just like, wah, ah. Everything yeah. was a hilarious to me That's at that amazing. Moment. And I realized like, you know, this is what it's all about. This exact moment is what it's all about.
Like Heather B says, keep it moving. Keep it moving.
Let's talk about Heather B for a minute because we got a little photo montage of her. I loved it back in her teens. She was so cute.
She was cool back then. And then she just matured into just like the dopest woman you could possibly be. Like, I love it. I love what she's all about. I really do.
And I love that she wasn't just like, oh, I was like drinking behind like the grocery store. Like, she was on the bowling team. You know, when she's like, my legs are still popping. Like,
I was
like,
star. Yeah. Bowler.
All of that. And she's like, yeah, I still bowl. I still like, I'm amazing. Like, she's a strutter track. Like, I love that she was like, she's not too cool for school. You know what I mean? Like,
no.
She's not like
she's
above
a real
it.
Woman, you
yeah.
know?
She's like having fun yeah. and enjoying it. And I'm like, go for you, girl.
Yeah. Always hustling, making money and, you know, doing what she's got to do and has a successful marriage yeah. and a loving marriage, you know, which is
super
cool.
Let's jump into that because who yeah. knew that Kevin was going to come in on the scene with like these I Spy goggles on, peeping on what healthy love is.
I love that. I know. That was a little bit of a surprise because, you know, we had talked about like who's married, who's not, you know, they really hadn't discussed given mm-hmm. as the relationship status on the Rubies. But hearing that Kevin got married and divorced quickly.
3 years.
I love Andre's question, but how good?
How long was it good? I think Kevin's just like,
I'm using it. I'm using your line from now on. Every time someone tells me they're divorced, would be like, how long was it good?
Or even, I'm going to say, anytime someone tries to be so bold and was like, I'm married 45 years. And you're like, yeah, but how many of those years were good? Tell me that.
That'll stop some people in their tracks.
Yeah, it will, because they'll stop and be like, huh, you know what?
You're like, ooh.
That year of the bad mortgage situation, that was bad. We fought a lot.
They start ticking the years off. Yeah. Like, well, that year was shitty.
I'm going to go with like 19 years of the 45. Were actually like, good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, then why don't you go around saying you're happily married for 19 years?
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of spouting off on your 45.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, keep it moving. Okay, so then they got into deal breaker stuff, which made me so curious as to Kevin's situation. I mean, I suppose it could be a lot of things. What's a list of deal breaking things?
Well, for me, I had immediately thought of religion.
When he said they had both had a very different upbringing.
Yes. So I think it might have been religion. Okay. That was just my, and I have no background on this, no knowledge or anything. I have not looked it up.
I don't know Kevin's ex.
I mean, I'm sure we could go look it up and find out. And do the due diligence.
Let's just cast aspersions. Come on.
You know what?
We're just talking it through. It could be anything. What's some deal breakers that you've heard? And we don't have to discuss our individual marriages, but we can talk about generalities.
We don't want to do that.
Hales, no. We're not talking about our private life. That's for nobody's business. We're just dissecting Kevin's.
I would say, so definitely religion. I would say children wanting,
whether you want children or not.
Right. Clearly sexual orientation. If you're not on the same page, that's probably.
You do need to be on the same page. Yeah. No, when you say religion, like you would think that for some people, it would just be too complicated to have varying views or.
I've heard of lots of marriages that seem to last that can have completely different religious views.
But you could see, I suppose, where there'd be certain hardcore beliefs.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you just were butting heads about it, it just would not work out. The idea that he's like studying what healthy love is and actually asking Heather, like, if you have any friends for me, like, I kind of thought in my heart that he was really admiring who Heather became.
And like, I think he's admiring many of them. And I see it just in the way he has conversations with them, which I really enjoyed about this series so far. Kevin has sat down with each individual roomie and had some deep conversations.
Mm. Which in 92, again, because they showed that they were kind of in and out. And again, they've explained they were very busy with their careers. But we didn't see that. Like, I don't think we ever saw Andre and Kevin talking.
No. It's really endearing. And I think it shows the maturity in him and how much he's changed and what he really values about them as friends. So I love that.
I appreciated that Andre too, like his marriage and his wife and everything. They went back and tried to talk to us a little bit, just how it all happened, that, you know, that they met in a restaurant and, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, 10 years. What do you think about that?
I was going to ask you that. Ooh. Could you be in a relationship for 10 years before being proposed to? Here's my question. How long have they been married?
Only like 3 or 4.
Yeah. So then they've only been, so this is like a post 2010 marriage, right?
Oh, for
is that
sure.
what we're saying?
I think so. Yeah.
All right.
I'm totally, again, just, this is totally guessing, but I kind of was under the impression that it wouldn't surprise me if they were getting into their later 30s and it almost came down to the kid question of like, if we're going to have kids,
oh yeah,
you know, we kind of got to get going on this. So,
but if he's 49, right? Ish.
Yeah.
Or 50. I can't remember what age he is. He got married in his 40s or 40.
Yeah.
Like you said, so maybe it was right before that big 40 mark that they decided, you know, put up or shut up kind of a thing. It kind of makes sense. I mean, I assume that after 30, if you're dating, you're going to really need to know this is the one.
We have to be honest. Like, so we are definitely Southern born and bred women.
I know. Yeah.
And so there is like a huge push in the South to get married and get your family started, which I know that some people are very anti. You know, I kind of raise my eyebrow now over time because I do think that there's something to be said to being young parents, to having all the energy and being able to run around and do stuff with your kids and be sort of like things still like, you know, roll off your back. You know, life hasn't really beaten you down too bad. There's something to be said for that part.
Okay.
And to be sort of nearing the end of your kids, maybe being 18, 19, 20 years old, and you're not totally worn out yet. Like you still have energy to enjoy. Like I said, you didn't get to 65 and only have 11 years left.
Yeah, thank God.
You know, but I have a lot of friends who live up in the Northeast. They didn't get married until they were like 35. Basically, they got married to have kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, now they're like 43, 44. They have like first graders.
Yeah.
And I am not impressed. I don't want their life. I wouldn't want like a 6-year-old hanging on me.
Because we live, it's the opposite life. It really is.
They're going to be like 55, Aish, before they even have a chance to really feel like they don't have someone like right on top of them all the time.
They also front loaded their lives with
usually working.
Freedom.
Unfortunately, it seems like it's all working.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate. We have exactly the same story.
We do.
Getting married earlier, having our kids, having older kids.
The path for all of us was all graduate high school, go directly to college, get your education. Yep. And we all did. And we're not saying we got married like 18 out of college. Like, we all have our education. But
higher
education. We get married at 21, 22 years old.
Yeah.
And start your kids pretty much before 25.
That I have literally talked to people even here in our area that think that's like absolutely insanity.
Barbaric. It is in a lot of ways. And here's the deal too. Maybe monetarily, we were able to make that work back then for a variety of reasons, including help from parents. Like, let's not be mistaken, which is kind of hilarious because I'm saying, oh, and we like wipe our hands clean of the kids at like 20. And then meanwhile, it's like, oh, my parents really helped me out when I was 21 and 24.
Right. They were like,
we don't really leave them alone that much. We still harass them for help here and there. But, I asked everyone. I was such a little, like, you know, I said in the last podcast that I identify as a CC and my curious cat nature. I would ask people, like in college, I would literally ask any adult who would listen to me, how old do you think you should be when you have kids?
Wow.
I asked that all the time. And you know what? Every adult ducked me. They would say, well, every person's different.
You just never know.
Yeah, bull. There's probably a right age, to be honest with you.
Do you have a right age? Right now, if we set our ages, they would be two separate.
Of what age I think you should probably get married?
Yeah.
Honestly, I think like 30 seems reasonable. Like, seems like you're a formed human being by 30, but you're still kind of young enough that if you had kids, you know, they'd be like 10 years old, 13 years old by the time they're our age.
I'm down for that. Yeah.
That seems okay.
Yeah.
I agree with you that as young as we were,
I think
we were tempting a whole lot of problems.
I don't know what we were doing.
We were trying to do the right thing. And you know what else comes into that? Religion. Religion plays into what happens. It's because, you know, we were raised to be like, you don't be sleeping around with a lot of guys and whatnot. And so in that case, if you were interested in sleeping with someone, you best marry them, right? Like, that's basically how
that's
it turned out.
That's basically what your parents wanted you
to
do.
That's what they wanted. I'm not saying, I mean, Lord, I'm not saying that's the correct way to look at things.
I am not either.
But that's how we were taught to think, you know?
Yeah.
Fascinating.
It is fascinating. We could go, this could be a whole subtopic.
Hey, man, it's complicated. I loved that Andre does all the cooking. And I love that he does it because he's a freaking food snob about it.
Yes.
That was so fun.
There's something about Andre. I don't know. He's so I keep saying this word, endearing, but like, I just love the person he's turned out to be.
He has so much more of a personality, you know, like he has so much more like clear, like likes and dislikes.
Calm.
Yeah.
And he's like, just like, it doesn't look like things rattle him. He's very logical.
And when he said, thinks. I have a short wick. First of all.
Really? I didn't hear that.
I know how turned on I get when there's sort of like a dad moment where he's like, I'm not putting up with Becky anymore. The situation's a fucking drag. I was like,
yes,
daddy, do it. Tell them they're being so bad. Like, I know. You know, and that's just me, you guys. I get a little bit nasty about that. Okay. When he said, no excuse for how Becky is acting, shit. I was like, damn.
But I like, my favorite line, and I wrote it down. This is like, when he just shut it down for me, is when he said, Becky has removed herself from the situation, so we need to remove her from the conversation.
That was like a Dr. Seuss line.
Down.
She removed herself from the situation. We need to remove her from the conversation. I was like,
period.
Yes. If someone leaves, just be like, be gone.
Be gone. And that is exactly what they needed to hear at that point. You know what I mean? So anyway, all in all, Andre, like, sweet as hell with his daughter.
Layered all day long. Has so many interesting little parts to him. Music, the cooking, you know, his relationship, his own kind of like challenges about like wanting to be like a monogamous guy and having to kind of work through that before he did, which I give him a lot of credit because a lot of people would have let society pressure them into getting married younger and would have cheated all day long and broken hearts.
Right.
So good on him for
waiting until he was ready.
Just waiting those 10 years. I mean, props to everyone who waited. I mean,
and props to his wife for waiting around.
I would think there's a lot of women who would be like, a decade, dude.
10 years.
That's an awful long time. But you and I are starting to see people up on Facebook who are our age who had a starter marriage, totally busted out of that one, and are now in long-term relationships, and engagement rings are popping up left and right now. Yes. I don't know if it's spring and things are popping because it's spring, or maybe because there's light at the end of the tunnel of quarantine.
Right. COVID's like if we made it.
We made it. We didn't kill each other during this time. So therefore, we must be able to make it the long haul. We totally met a new podcast yesterday and they said, get this, Aish. She's 26. He's 30. They moved in one day before lockdown.
Whoa.
They said, we feel like we've been 10 years in this 1 year. Because
and if you can make it during that.
Yes.
You can make it.
You can make it. I was like, I'm impressed. That's a little shout out to It's a Musical Podcast, Drew and Danny.
Shout out,
y'all. Who else stuck out to you? How about some of the background that we got on old Jules?
Well, first of all, Miss Nosy Self, Julie, I didn't pick up that she was that particular on needing to know everything.
I didn't either.
Did
when
you?
They used the word controlling, I was
control
like,
control freak.
Oh, now. Oh.
What do you think about that?
I mean,
like it was her second job.
Julie has a second job. Being nosy.
Being nosy.
I know you have some nosy people in your life. And so
I
know you know what it's like. I think I have less nosy people, but at the same time, I find it fascinating when they are like spending all their time just trying to figure out what's going on. Because I'm like, why don't you just live it? Just live it, you know? But like the idea that Julie went through the trash for production notes.
That's funny.
Oh my God. That's a level of like.
It's another level.
Wow. I mean, you know what? But that speaks to, we said back in 92, maybe they weren't so aware of what was going to be, you know, how they're going to be portrayed. She knew to care about what was going to be in those production notes.
Exactly. She knew that she needed to figure it out. But that would be us. We would be like that.
We already said at the very beginning, like, on accident, we're Julie.
On accident, we're Julie. In many ways. And I didn't know that this was one of the ways we would be like her. But I was like, oh, so I would totally be like peeping this shit out too, because I would need to know.
We both would want to know for the funniest reasons that I could come up with. Some of them would be because if we wronged someone and they were bitching to the camera behind our back, we'd want to make it right. So like if people were like, oh my God, Aisha is such a freak. She has the messiest bathroom or like whatever. You would want to know that in the production notes so that you could just like squelch the situation.
Right, and be like.
So I feel like that's why I'd be looking. I don't know if I'd be looking if it said like Caroline's a complete spaz. She says stupid stuff like CC. Like I don't know what I'd be thinking. I don't don't know.
So, well, some part of me probably wouldn't want to know all those things either, because I'd be like, you know what?
How could you act normal if you were reading the production notes?
Ignorance is bliss.
I think
at some point you should just let things happen.
But what a reveal on Julie, because that explains
so much.
She was
like, I don't think it was obvious. And I'm laughing so hard because they're all like, it's clear. Like they all, the production knew.
Yeah.
All of the roommates knew. It was no surprise. And Julie's like, I didn't think it was obvious. Like she was so clueless.
I love that so much.
Yes, it is obvious.
Oh my God.
Everyone knew. The dog and cat knew back then. I mean, come on.
So that explains why she's the one that can't let it go with Becky. Because she's like, she has to have her toe in everything. It's just part of the deal with her, apparently.
Did you buy the whole, the reason why Becky wanted to have the conversation with her was because she had no, like, skin in the game?
No, because I thought Julie took a very particular side. And Julie even admitted that she basically finked out. Like, she didn't push Becky.
I put she pussed out.
Well, she did puss out, but pussies are good, so we're not going to say it like that. We're going to say it like...
But she did
like,
fink
she
out.
She piked out, right?
Out, yeah.
She did something. She didn't... She I was didn't, surprised she didn't toe the line. I thought she was going to pressure
waste.
Becky more. What
waste of conversation. You want to just jump into that conversation? Because I feel like
when
Becky showed up... Oh, God. But that's how I felt,
no,
you know?
Because I wrote Becky and Julie meeting went nowhere.
She just basically was like listening to what she had to say.
Which was the same stuff
shit.
She did say already.
And then just said, well, none of this has to be wrapped up in a pretty bow.
Which I guess I respect like 1% the concept of like just coming to peace with the idea that you can have a group of people come together. It might not all end in a conversation that's like perfect.
Right.
You might still have like jaggedy edges of like, well, that part didn't go exactly right or whatever.
And you can't have, the funny thing is like you can't talk to one person about a group conversation and get everybody's perspective. I mean, she's got to be in front of everybody, right? You know, Julie can't be everybody at that moment. Julie couldn't do that, but at the same time, she let Becky off the hook.
And not only that, but that's I think it was kind of bullshit because ultimately, Julie just acted as like a crash test dummy. Cameras aren't following Becky without Julie going. So we're just going to put this body in front of Becky. And then Becky is just basically talking to the audience. Because Julie didn't say anything back and didn't push anything back. So it almost just gave Becky camera time.
That is kind of bullshit, but yeah.
It's a lot bullshit.
I didn't look at it that way. That's a very smart way to look at it.
It was so...
Do you feel manipulated on that?
I do, because I feel like that is why it couldn't be Norm or it couldn't be Kevin. Because it couldn't be
it
anyone that was going to push back. Mm-hmm. And I thought, though, Julie had a strong enough backbone and a strong enough convictions in this argument that she would say, look, you're wrong when it comes to talking about race. You just are. And you have to think about it differently.
Right.
And that part, I was like, God, this is it. This is all we're going to get. When she said she was willing to talk on the screen like Eric was. Did you get like that little kid vibe of like, well, I just want to do it like he's doing it, where he's just eating snacks on a couch and just getting to visit with everyone.
Yeah.
And all everyone does is compliment your sweater. But you don't have to be a part of, like, the day in and day out.
Absolute terrible, like, response. Like, if she felt so strongly about her convictions and what she felt the show was portraying her as and all the stuff that she went on and on and on about with Kevin, she wasn't making her thoughts be known. Like, it was, I can't even put it into words. Like, it's like she missed the mark completely.
Yes. She had the opportunity.
She had the opportunity. She didn't even take it.
Mm-mm.
Like, if you really are convicted on how you feel and you are like, you know what? I feel the way I feel and I am not going to budge. I won't even listen because I know I'm right. Then come back and do that and stand your ground and tell us why.
Be comfortable in your own skin if you are.
Don't pussy out, even though pussies are great.
Don't pike out.
And go and want to be on FaceTime.
On the screen. I love when Heather
Zoom?
Goes.
What is this?
When Heather goes, I'm not into this. If I'm around, I'll listen to the screen.
For real.
I'll listen, Heather. I'll listen to the screen.
Come
that
on.
Cracked me up so hard because the idea of just like, I wrote down, Becky wants to be a screen person.
And we don't got time for screen people.
We don't got Okay, this was supposed to be a real conversation.
This is what Heather's saying. Like, don't embarrass yourself. Going back to time, don't waste my time. Jeez. With this bullshit with you on the screen.
Yeah.
Like, bring yourself through the doors. Walk your tail right through the doors and say what you got to say. If you don't even have the respect to do that, I don't have the respect to show up and watch a screen.
I sure don't. I have questions about the COVID protocol once she left the building and once she's talking about being on Long Island. Well, I'm just wondering if all the screen talk and all that kind of stuff, if there was any safety part to that. Or could she have come back? And it would be a shame if production-wise, she was told, you can't go back into the house. I would think that would come out. You know what I mean? Like, I would hope it would. I would hope they would be, like, very forthright that, like, she can't come back in the house because she chose to leave and she went and visited with other people. We can't contaminate the house. Like, we can't do that. Because we don't know where she went.
If you were her and you knew that was the one rule you couldn't break.
I would be putting a banner over my head that was like, I left and so now I have to be a screen person just to be safe.
Right.
Like I just left to cool off.
Exactly. So that was the one thing you couldn't do. And you went and stuck yourself. She went to the subway station or something.
You know I really wonder what.
Even if it was running. I don't know what was going on there. You know what I mean? Wherever she could have gone. And what?
And what is right? What a messy.
What you gonna do?
Messy, messy situation. She did have a one-on-one with Kevin.
Yeah. Whew. Where do we start? First of all, I'll say this. I applaud Kevin for wanting to still sit down with her. She just feels that he didn't like her. And that's not the case. That's an easy cop out. She was really going to just dismiss everything that came out of his mouth. But he was coming from a place of, he's like, I care about you. That man would not have put all that time, all of the thought that he's been bringing to the other roommates if he didn't care about her, you know, and want to resolve this and talk about this in a very calm manner. And she just will not understand.
I felt like there was something to...
There's work to be done.
The couple of days that Kevin had spent with the other people and just the different things that people had been saying to each other. I do think there was like an overall arching vibe of like, we must mean something to one another as this group because we all came back. And so, because it was almost like Kevin wasn't sure if he was friends with the rest of them exactly. But when he was sort of having this realization, I'm not saying it was even necessarily verbalized in the episode, how he like went out of his way to talk with Andre. Like it was like there was a realization of like, oh, wait, we have a real bond here and we should celebrate that in some way. And we should respect that and be sort of kinder to each other.
Yeah,
because we all showed up for each other here.
Exactly.
And I felt like, man,
that's
Becky,
a slap in the face.
I thought to all of them, when
she left, that's the point. And regardless of her inability to listen and understand that she has to just listen to the conversation that Kevin's trying to have with her and trying to explain to her that, like, it's not about just all the things that you're spouting. I have black friends. I have a black dance troupe. I did this. Blah, 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 blah.
I lost my skin color, Aisha.
She lost her skin color. She did.
I have to ask you, let's play a little thought game here.
Okay.
What could Becky have responded to anyone that could have ended this in a good way?
Well, one, she could have stopped talking over everybody. I think it was just time for her to just be quiet. She's not even there yet. She's nowhere close. One, be quiet. Two, start to listen and really hear what people are saying. Three, where am I going wrong? What am I doing that I need to change? It's just that. I just think that everybody just needed that. Like, okay, I get you. I feel you. I hear you. Now teach me where I need to start, what do I need to start reading? Where do I need to start going with this?
So let me ask you, do you think that would have gone over well, given that in the, I don't know if it's this episode or the previous one, where Kevin said, black people are tired of educating white people about racism.
Yeah, I wrote that down.
So if she said, I'm open and I'm willing to learn, teach me what I need to know, would that have worked? Or do you think Kevin would have been like, it's not up for me to teach you that? Like, where would they have, would it have kept going?
Yeah, there's the rub, right?
Like, yes.
We're tired of it, yet people need to learn. Yes. You know,
so but it's what
like,
do you do?
We're in 2021. You still need to fucking learn this stuff.
I was talking to a friend who you actually know, too, from high school. She happens to be a white woman. Her husband is a person of color. And they adopted a little boy who is also a person of color.
Okay.
she had to go, they had to go, the parents had to go to a class, like a sensitivity class about raising a black little boy mm-hmm. that was taught by white people.
Oh, okay.
And her husband was offended as a black man, and she was offended, like feeling like, how did I get authentic information just then when I feel like I was just basically, wait a minute, what? You're just a fellow white woman telling me
how to parent a black child?
Yes. And she was like really felt.
Oh, hell to the no.
Right. And so it was this, it was this weird game of like, if you can't go to black people and ask, because
we're not saying you can't ask,
but what, how do you handle it? What is the right way for
Becky? I think the thing is like in this day and age, there are so many ways to educate yourself.
True.
Without having to go and ask your token black friend for advice, okay, or whatever that is, whoever that is, or you can educate yourself. There's plenty of books out there. There's websites. There's things that you can do. There's a list of ways that you can educate yourself.
Well, there's a couple of things that, that you and I had talked about actually early on in Black Lives Matter. Things like there was like a whole like library of books for kids mm-hmm. that you can access online where it actually had various people of color reading the storybooks. That so you didn't even like say you're like a parent who's like, I'm just throwing my hands up. Right. You could literally stick your kiddo in front of a computer screen, hit play. And there were various people with authentic stories who were going to then read about racism or read about how to approach right. bullying or what have you. Hopefully that be more valuable.
Well, I mean, basically. There's, yeah, I mean, if we're talking like that, we're talking even with kids, you're going back, you know, I was talking about, I guess I was responding to it like as an adult
yeah.
asking me, but even if it's like kids, I mean, there's so many, you'd have to start with children. You have to start with, you know, just our basic history, our U.S. history,
yes.
you know, teaching them the correct history, things that have been left off out of our history books. You know, so many Black Americans, so many things that have happened in this country that are completely left off our history books. Going back and finding all those type of things, educating your children on those things.
I like to listen to AM radio, and it is definitely full of white men voices. Mm-hmm. So I always try to find alternatives. Like what mm-hmm. else? What else is going on? And only something that I was just aware of just recently was our, like if you're in the Houston area, it's 1320 AM, is the Black Information Network. That is what I've chosen to listen to now, because what's fascinating to me is that I also listen to NPR when I'm at home. It's interesting to me what stories are being featured that day, because over here on NPR, you're going to get a lot of just, I'm going to say pretty vanilla, and I mean that in a very white way, mm-hmm. kind of stories. Whereas yesterday I was listening to how they're trying to put in some legislation to change the Tulsa riots mm-hmm. to be called the Tulsa Massacre. Mm-hmm. That's not something that was playing on mainstream news, but I was like listening to it over here. I'm not trying in any way to hold myself up like, I go to a black dance class. I listen to a black radio show. Not trying to be like no. that. But if you want to start to join the conversation, maybe be aware of the topics that are being talked about in yeah. different cultural groups.
Yeah.
And if you know what is important to different groups, perhaps you could join the conversation a little more knowledgeably and not expect a person of color to fill you in on what the Tulsa Massacre even was.
And do you know, that's funny that you brought up the Tulsa Massacre, because when we did our Lovecraft Country podcast, we talked about that heavily. Did you know that the Tulsa Massacre wasn't not even in the Oklahoma state history books?
It is not a surprise at all, because look how close we are. I mean, we're Texas. I never heard of it once.
Nope.
It is such a tragedy and so appalling.
And if you don't know about it, please go.
Look it up. Please
look it up. Yes.
You will be appalled. I mean, the fact that it was like the only time that like aircraft shooting was like on American people
soil.
Like that, like American mm-hmm. people like that.
God, I've got goosebumps.
Oh my God. Like it's insane. And it's insane to think of what the repercussions were. Because for anyone who doesn't know, just like real quick, the majority of black businesses were burned and the majority yep. of black families and prominent people of color who were doctors, lawyers, yep. bankers.
Called it Black Wall Street.
I mean, these were the people who were going to make the next step difference.
Yeah.
It was going to change things. And they were literally
completely obliterated,
gunned down from the sky. Like yeah. how nuts is that, you guys?
Crazy.
Maybe if the right thing isn't to have, like you said, your token black friend say something to you, maybe at least turn on the radio and try a different channel on the TV, try a different channel on the radio. Listen
to
some things.
Pick up, I mean,
please.
He mentioned that white fragility book.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a great book. I actually have it on, we have it in our house. It's very interesting that he said when people are starting to feel get their feelings hurt, they shut down the conversation. We see this all the time. That's essentially what Becky was doing. When your feelings get hurt, you shut down the conversation and you don't want to continue it. You pretend there's no problem. That is the problem.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
100%.
And I think with Becky, it's just, I have no idea when she'll get it, if she'll get it. But I think Kevin was like rocked. He was like, he's like, I'm done at this point.
And you know
what? He was so deflated and defeated at that point when she hung up on him.
It's no longer Kevin's responsibility.
It's
anyone's
tiring.
Responsibility to teach Becky or to even approach Becky anymore. Like, she's just got to figure this out.
But I think for Kevin, I think even though he said we were tired of it, it's like he knows his platform.
Yes.
You know, they are aware of what they're doing, where the cameras are. It's the time to say the things he wants to say and also educate others that are listening and watching the show. So that's why we're getting so much, I think, from him. I mean, 14 books later, He's like, what else do I got to do?
It's very true. I thought it was really fascinating how they highlighted the 1992's camera work, basically, to bring focus to different issues. So, like, I thought it was cool that they pointed out that Julie became aware that wherever she went in the city, the cameras had to follow.
I wrote that down, too. Yep.
I mean,
with the homeless people that she encountered and, like, bringing the spotlight to that.
That was really, really cool that she had that realization and bothered to use it. Because it's just like you're saying, like, Kevin realized the platform and used it. And, like, I don't think that many of the rest of them really did. I really felt that Julie realized
Norman,
and then followed him around.
And I think we should
talk about that.
Yeah, I think
sure.
we should end this podcast with Norman. But Julie, with her being only 19 years old and figuring that out. Bravo.
Yes.
Like, wow.
And that reality TV didn't exist before. So it's not like she had that like,
no.
Oh, wait, they're going to follow me. Oh, wait, I could like enact some change.
What a smart
here.
Woman. You
very,
know,
very. Give her a lot of credit.
A lot of credit. And then, you know, Norman with bringing the platform of gay rights and just sexuality to the screen. You know, he's not, like you said, he wasn't the first gay guy. I mean, it was, you know, or whatever. It was just like he gave it a platform and let the world see some things that maybe they hadn't seen before or understand it a little bit more, maybe.
And put a face to a story and realize, like, you know, this is a real person. You know, when you say
normal,
some sort of homophobic remark, you're just saying it to the air. But if you put the word Norman in that spot of what you're saying about someone, suddenly you pause and say, well, I don't want to say that about Norman. And so then it's like, well, then why would you ever say it about anyone? Which people have no problem, provided it's not a human's name.
No, of
right?
course.
Then they pump
when
the brakes.
You know, yes, exactly.
You know, it's like when you know somebody, you know, you
it
can't
all
talk
changes.
Like that. And so Norman was amazing. I did not even remember how close we were to the AIDS epidemic.
Right.
In 92. In my brain, I had just watched this whole thing of the 80s, the decade that made us. So I watched this whole thing about Ryan White was a part of that whole series. And It was really fascinating. But to think that this was only just 92, we were still very much dealing with that. And Norman had been dealing with that for the years prior. Wow. You know, I don't think I absorbed that as a teenager watching this in 92.
No, I don't think so either. When I think back to it, who remembers exactly, you know, that's a while ago, you know, so many years ago, 29, 30 years. What was I thinking? What?
You I know, don't like, think I would have absorbed the enormity
absorbed?
Of that. And especially when he was talking about
our first
about,
pandemic of our lives.
I don't think I appreciated not only the struggle of, you know, saying these things on mainstream television, if you will, but that the gay community would question him, push back, say, you didn't do it the right way. You didn't say the right words. You can't
or you can't
like
be bisexual
this.
Because that's not really either
what
or.
What is that?
Right.
Like, I'm like, wait a minute.
Like now the gay community would never,
would
it would never be like that now,
wouldn't.
You know? I know because I feel like
they would not.
All communities are hand in hand working together right now.
I appreciate you saying that. And I really hope that that's true. But I can say even within the special needs community, there's a weirdo hierarchy of people being like, well, I'm not that disabled.
Oh man.
There's a whole thing of like, oh, I don't, you know, need, and I'm speaking, you guys, I have three special needs kids, so I'm not speaking out of turn here. It is an odd thing because sometimes I'm in it and sometimes someone will look at me and be like, oh, well, your daughter is, you know, blonde haired, blue eyed, and yes, she's deaf and blind, but you have it better off than my you know, really large son over here who people have less compassion for because he's not this little cutie. Wow. And I'm like, we are not hierarchying needs like that. Yeah. Like, that's
we're all working together.
Really weird to say to me, you know? Yeah. And there's that kind of stuff all the time. So I wonder, as much as I want to think that the gay community would be always open-armed, I think that there's judgy people and there's hierarchies and people who think you're not doing it right in every community. Yeah. That's what I was learning from Norman's story.
But I think what we saw, you know, when we saw the parade outside, that's what gave me that hope and that love again. Like, okay, Black Lives Matter, Trans Lives Matter, Black Trans Lives Matter, a whole thing, you know, they're all walking together. They're all protesting, marching in New York, down the streets, and they're out screaming, we love you, we're with you. I love that. That was a moment that they needed.
Yeah. It really brought them together.
It really did. Like, it was almost serendipitous how it happened right then.
Yeah.
And where it did. You know what I mean? Like, wow.
I want to be like, serendipitous? Or did someone point, like, if you go down that street, there's TV cameras.
No, don't say that. In the no, just please let me live in the land of that just happened to magically come down their street, please.
If it was production, who cares? Because
that's a big, big, big ask.
They did a good job of again, televising it, because there was no way to have the same, you know, abortion rally of 92 or, you know, have any of those conversations, because we can't have those in the same way with quarantine stuff. I appreciated that it was like they tried to bring that element in just out the window, which was a complicated way to have to do that, but I kind of think they did it like that.
I think so. Well, they also did just have a random field trip to the Stonewall.
Yeah, bar. Yeah, so I don't know. All right. I'm just saying. And hey, that doesn't
take... I'm over here in La La Land. Like, it was all... They were all skipping down the road and it was just happened at the same time.
It doesn't take anything away from it.
But it did. It was
good.
No, it didn't take anything away from it. It just was... It was a great moment for them all to have together.
You know what was another great moment? And this is the way we're gonna end our podcast for this one.
What is so great?
The water guns.
Oh my God, the silliness.
I was totally thinking, like, why do I not carry water guns with me? Like, I feel like I need to start doing that, because that is some... That is some shit that I think could cause mayhem, like, anywhere you go.
That's
like,
right up your alley.
I kind of love it, and I kind of want to do that. The fact that Julian 92 went to Macy's and was spraying Eric, that is hilarious. It brought me back to, I don't know if you ever did this, because I know you were kind of a good kiddo in high school, but...
I would not use a water gun.
No. I can remember running around, like, in the airport, in the underground tunnels, and riding the trains. That was, like, a whole activity.
No, my mom worked there. My mom worked for the airlines. She would kill me.
But that was a whole activity. That was, like, a Saturday night, was to ride those trains. And they weren't locked in anyway. Like, you didn't have to
You just went to the airport and did that?
Yeah, and, like, rode the trains.
Oh, God.
It was so silly and funny.
I'm surprised my mom didn't bust your ass.
You know, it was guys and girls. It was all silly.
Stop it.
So funny and weird. Yeah, it was a whole thing.
They're the same fucking trains right now. Like, they literally look the same. They've not remodeled them.
If we had added water guns, it would have been a whole nother level.
Girl, you you would have been like, you know what this needs?
I kind of want to carry a tiny water gun with me.
They don't have regular tiny water guns anymore, do they? Well, maybe the 99-cent store.
Ooh,
they have, like, water cannons and shit.
Yeah, I don't want that. I don't need, like, a big old Nerf. Like, I'm not trying to get somebody, like, saturated. Just a little, like...
Super soaker.
Just a little, like, did something get into my hair or something? Like, it is, like, a little dampness. It's just, like, me squirting you from across the room. I need that level of silliness.
That's funny.
You know? Yeah. Like, I need that. I was really thinking of, like, I should really get a water gun for this podcast and shoot it at you at the end here.
It would be like, well, guys, this is Aisha really, and Carolina's died. R.I.P.
It would be a hot ending to this one.
R.I.P. Curious Cat.
Oh my God.
The kitty got wet and she did not like it.
I'm like, whoa, I don't know about that. Why I hear wet kitties are all good. This is Caroline.
And this is Aisha.
Thanks so much for listening. Please head over to Apple Podcasts, where you can rate, review, and subscribe to Pod Clubhouse. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.